At the beginning, we showed that the doctrine, the doctrinal viewpoint of the book is the second coming, the tribulation and second coming. And we'll see a little bit more of that when we get down to verse 12, 13, 14, and 15 when it focuses on the Antichrist. Okay, but we're at verse 1. It says, "My son, if thou be surety, surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler." Okay, so I put all those together because you got a paragraph mark at verse 6. Okay, surety. What's surety? Insurance. Insurance. Surety. Insurance. Okay, so insurance. Now, often people use these two verses or these five verses against co-signing. Co-signing alone, which is fine. It's okay to use those verses for that. But if thou be surety, it's an agreement of some type. Insurance. Okay, now as far as insurance or agreements go, you don't realize it probably, but most people contract to go to jail. They make agreements. Most attorneys are negotiators. And when you ever hear of a plea agreement, that is a contract. And that is a contract that means I'm willing to go to jail over something. And of course, what makes a contract valid is that there must be a meeting of the minds. That makes a contract valid. A meeting of the mind meaning that both parties fully understand what's involved in a contract. And of course, most plea bargains, and almost in all cases, the one that usually signs it doesn't fully understand what's been going on. So it's a fraudulent contract. Now, probably the biggest fraud that's been put on Americans is the Social Security Act of 1935. And that is socialism. That's what it's called, socialism. That's how it first began under FDR. And it's amazing when you bring up the Social Security number, if people ask you your Social Security number, and if you don't give it to them, and it's amazing the looks you get from that. But if somebody asks you your telephone number and you say, "I don't have a telephone," they'd probably look at you funny, but that's a voluntary business. But the same goes with Social Security number. But boy, is it tough to try to live without one. And so, but the problem with Social Security is that you weren't told. Most of us got it because our parents got it for, you know, the child. But even at that, you were never told all the implications involved. So technically, it's a fraudulent contract. But it is surety. It is insurance. Okay, look, if you would, in Proverbs 11, verse 15. Now, when you get talking about insurance, the Bible doesn't come right out and say it is a sin to have insurance. And I don't preach that it is a sin. And Proverbs 11, 15, it says, "He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it." Boy, that smarts. When you catch in wind of that. Boy, when you find out you've been caught in a goofy contract, it smarts. That's the idea there. "He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure." I hate insurance. I hate it. Do I have it on my car? Yeah. Got on that. Kind of wonder if I do have it on my house. Do I have health insurance? Well, the one that the Lord gives out is the one I have. No premiums on his. But even if that, insurance, it's a game, it's a gamut. I mean, it's a scam. But what do you do with it, you know? That's something each person, I dare say, has to figure it out between you and the Lord. Now, there's a man named Tom Williams, an evangelist. He's a fundamentalist, but he's a good man, and his wife got spinal meningitis, and he didn't have insurance, and the bills kept running up. But all his bills were paid. That's what happened to him, and he personally has a conviction against it, but again, he doesn't tell people that they should have the same conviction he has. But the whole insurance thing is a hoot. I mean, there's if your house burns down, if you have house insurance, you have to fight tooth and nail just to get the insurance company to abide by their contract. Well, there's a fellow up in Crown Point that has helped certain people get the full extent of their contract because he kind of specializes in that. And so he's read through that, but boy, if you have to read everything and all the insurance stuff, what a scam you have to read. Okay, and of course, if you have insurance, you know, if you pay out the nose for it for years and years and years, and then when it's time for you to collect on it, they go bankrupt. And the Bible says, he that hateth suretyship is sure. But the practical thing is, don't sign something you understand. Don't understand. Don't put your signature on anything you don't understand. Now, if you're being threatened and you're scared, if somebody's threatening you to put your signature down on something, okay, put your signature down if you feel threatened. And then right after it, UCC 1-207. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that you can argue that signature. And or you can write on there with prejudice, or you can write on there non-assumption. You know, of course, you got to remember all these words. So, but the thing is make sure you read things. When somebody throws something in front of you, Americans have been conditioned. Throw it, sign it. Everybody just signs without reading. Make sure you read those things. And it's funny when the reaction that you get is somebody throws something in front of you and they sign it, and if you pick it up and read it, they're sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. They say, what are you waiting for? I said, well, I got to read it. It says you have to read it and understand it before you can sign it. So many people sign it and lie. Okay, but the practical thing is if you've made an agreement with somebody and you found out that your agreement was wrong, do what you can to get out of it, but keep your friend if you can. Okay, get a meeting of the mind. Now, we have certain remedies in law that if you have reread contracts that you have signed in the past and your rereading of them bothers you, causes a problem with you, you can rewrite your contract by a notice and demand. And what you do is you write a notice of what you've read, and then you give them your interpretation and your notice part, and then you demand from them in 30 days or less to prove you wrong, and if they don't, then you're deemed correct. Okay, the laws of contract read that if there is confusion in the contract, it must go against the author because he is presumed to understand his intentions of the contract. And of course, you got to understand contracts. Now, contracts are very important with God. So important that you have a Bible that has an Old Testament and a New Testament. And what is a testament? It is synonymous with the word covenant. And what is a covenant? It is a type of a contract. God deals with contracts. And isn't it great that in the New Testament, when you trust the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior, He has a record down and He has a contract written that you have eternal life? And the record's written down in 1 John 5. Okay, so the idea here is you're going to be snared by your words, but you have to make sure that if you can get out of it, then do what you can to get out of it. If you can't, then abide by your words. Now, let's see how important this snaring of the words are. Even in cases where fraudulent things occur. Look in Joshua chapter 9, verse 15. many churches that apply for the incorporation status, they don't realize the entanglement that comes involved with that. And many of them that sign those contracts for incorporation, they don't realize that they are promising to abide by those rules. And so it's a very dangerous thing. Look in Joshua 9, verse 15. Here's a contract. And if you back up and read the story, this is where the Gibeonites are involved. Remember? It's amazing. In Joshua chapter 8, verse 34, it says, "And afterward he read all the words of the law, the blessings and curses, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses commanded, which Joshua read not before all the congregation of Israel, with the women and the little ones and the strangers that were conversant among them." Now, is that just the book of Deuteronomy, or is that Genesis to Deuteronomy? Not certain. But let's make it just Deuteronomy. Okay, either way, Deuteronomy is going to be read. But isn't it amazing how after reading verse 34 and 35 in Joshua, where he said, "We've read the law of Moses," and in that reading, they came across the few verses where it says, "Don't make an agreement or a covenant with the people in the land of Canaan." They read that, and then in Joshua 9, they made a covenant with the Gibeonites. Now, of course, the Gibeonites were pretty sneaky about this. It's a fraudulent situation, and you have to be very cautious. If you back up and look in verse 7, well, verse 6, it says, "They went to Joshua unto the camp at Gilgal, and said unto them, and to the men of Israel, We be," ain't that funny, "we be come from a far country." There's one in Exodus where it says, we be all dead men, some Egyptians. So he said, "We be come from a far country now, therefore make ye a league with us. And the men of Israel said unto the Hivites, Peradventure ye dwell among us, and how shall we make a league with you? And they said unto Joshua, We are thy servants. And Joshua said unto them, Who are ye, and from whence come ye?" Two questions. They said unto him, "From a very far country thy servants are come. Because of the name of the Lord thy God, we have heard the fame of him and all that he did in Egypt." Notice they avoided a question. You've got to watch out for people that don't answer your questions. Okay, then it says, "And all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond Jordan, to Sihon king of Heshbon and Og king of Bashan, which was at Ashtoreth. Wherefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spake to us, saying, Take victuals with you for the journey, and go to meet them, and say unto them, We are your servants, therefore now make ye a league with us. This our bread we took hot for our provision out of our houses on the day we came forth to go unto you, but now, behold, it is dry and is moldy, and these bottles of wine which we filled were new, and behold, they be rent. And these our garments and our shoes are become old by reason of the very long journey. And the men took of their victuals and asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord." Didn't pray about it. Then it says, "And Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live, and the princes of the congregation swear unto them." Now there's a contract. Now how's God view that contract? Now, if you have a cross-reference, you might have one there in going into 1 Samuel. I'm sorry, 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel. Anybody have a cross-reference in 2 Samuel? Okay, good. 2 Samuel 21, verse 1, 2, 3, and 4. Now, that contract lasted a long time. And here in 2 Samuel 21, the Lord holds the nation of Israel to this contract. 2 Samuel 21, verse 1, "There was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year and a half to year. David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, It is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites. And the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, Now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, What shall we do for you? And wherewith shall I make the atonement, that we may bless the inheritance of the Lord? And the Gibeonites said unto him, We will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house, neither for us shalt thou kill any man in Israel. And he said, What ye shall say, that will I do for you, and then so forth. Down the line. Now that contract was held out by God. That's how important it is for us to keep our word. It used to be in America that a man's word was his bond. Or his handshake was valid. Now you have to get it written down. And if it's a contract that is over a year, it must be written to be valid. If it's under a year, verbal contracts are still okay under a year, but you're going to have witnesses to hear the contract in order to make it valid. Okay, so in the Bible, contracts play a very important role, so a person better be very, very careful how you make contracts or make agreements. Be very, very cautious about things. Read things through. Most people would say have an attorney read it through, but I wouldn't say that. Read it yourself. You got more brains. You know, if you don't understand the words, get a dictionary. Read the dictionary. Figure out what the words say. Okay, so there's the first five verses. The verse 5 may bring up a common saying, deliver thyself as a roe. Nothing runs like a deer. Yeah, common saying. You'll find about the Lord's second coming in Song of Solomon 2, verse 8, where he's like a young harp. Leaping and skipping upon the hills. Nothing runs like a deer. Okay, to verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Okay, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler. So there's kind of there, guide, overseer, ruler, subtle shows the duties of a pastor in a way. Because he is referred to all three of those, guide, overseer, or ruler. I know most of them like the idea of being a ruler. They think they're sitting on some throne or something. Think they're real hot snot in a silver platter, but they're only cold boogers on a paper plate. But that's how it goes. Okay, so go to the ants. Study them ants. Now, in Job chapter 12, it says, go to the beasts and ask them. The animals can teach us a lot of things. Now, Bill Gothard, they have three books called Character Sketches, and they study a lot of the animals, and they show the character qualities of animals, and then show that where a Christian should have some of those character qualities. Okay, so what do we learn from ants? Verse 8, provide her meat in the summer, so when make hay while the sun shines, and gather her food in the harvest. They work hard at it. How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep and a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Now, of course, we all know that when you get on the highways and travel, you're going to spend the money. You don't know the places where you get the good deals, and you're going to be forking out the dough, and as far as traveling goes. Now, notice the Bible uses the word traveling. Words mean things. Traveling's different than driving. And they can license driving. They can't license traveling. So the question to ask the officer is, what makes you think I'm in commerce? You know, I'm not driving my motorized vehicle with passengers. I'm traveling about in my car with my guest. You say it's a matter of semantics. Not so. Words mean things. And a person be very cautious with the words they say. But isn't it so true, verse 11, when you're on the road traveling, boy, it does cost. And thy wants as an armed man. There's a man going to steal. Thief. Okay, now verse 12, we got a paragraph mark. A naughty person. A wicked man. Walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes. He speaketh with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. Okay, let's back up. Back to that naughty person. Read the context. Go back through it. Psalms 52 is an entire psalm about the Antichrist. The second most popular character in the Bible is the Antichrist. Job chapter, 15, the entire chapter describes the Antichrist. Chapter 18, chapter 20, those entire chapters describe the Antichrist. The three fellows were insinuating that Job was. Psalms 52, the entire chapter describes the Antichrist, or shall I say the first seven verses at least. Okay, and it says, verse 1, why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs, like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. That next word gives you the clue, Selah, the doctrinal clue, tribulation. That's reference to Selah Petra. So whenever you see Selah, you know you're on second coming ground, or you're dealing with the tribulation of second coming. Verse 4, thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living. The righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him. He who laughs last, laughs best. And Psalms 2 shows that the Lord is going to laugh the heathen. And then it says, lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusteth in the abundance of his riches, and strengtheneth himself in his wickedness. Another psalm like that is Psalms 10. These are psalms about the Antichrist. Psalms 10. Psalms 10, most of the psalm, looks like all of it, deals with the Antichrist in action. Shows you how he's going to work, how he's going to operate. Psalms 10, why standest thou far off, O Lord? Why hidest thou thyself in times of trouble? It's called Jacob's trouble. There's the prayer of a Jew. Now he's going to describe the Antichrist. The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined. For the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire and blesseth the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. The wicked, to the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. He hath said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Look at there, fraud. According to James 5, verse 4, that's how they get rich in the last days. Fraud. That's the whole operation of most government organizations today. It's fraud. Social Security Act. It's fraud. That's what it is. It's fraud. Isn't that interesting? That word shows up. Fraud. We'll go to the James 5 passage after this. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. He sitteth in lurking places of the village, in the secret places. Ooh, look at there. There's a secret society. It's hiding in there. It's all right in there. We're going to get more when we get into the evil eye in Proverbs. The secret society. He lurketh in a secret place, doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. He lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. First Peter 5 mentions he's a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. Now, it doesn't say here, but he's going to eat these people. He's going to eat them in a sacrifice. Okay, that thing on fraud, let's go ahead and run over to James 5. James 5. Remember, the epistle of James is aimed at the 12 tribes, verse 1 of chapter 1. And those 12 tribes are in the last days, James chapter 5, verse 3. That's the doctrine, the last days. So we can get some information. We can read some prophecy, actually, while we're reading James. We can also get some spiritual application, some great application in James. But you'll see through the book of James that all rich people are doomed. They're damned. All rich are going to hell. Why? Well, the only way to get rich in a tribulation is take the mark. Take the mark, take the number. And people are being conditioned that a number. A lot of folks say that, you know, a Social Security number is the mark of the beast. No, it ain't. The mark of the beast is a kiss from the Pope. The beast is a leopard. The leopard's got black spots. Those spots look like rosettas. The number is 666. Now, they're conditioning people to get used to numbers, and eventually they're going to get to a cashless society. That's the idea. And control people by numbers. Now, they do this by fraud. James 5, verse 1. Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered, the rust of them shall be a witness against you. And ye shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasures together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud. It's kept back by fraud. In our day of deception, things aren't often what they appear to be. Okay, now if we go back to Proverbs 6, let's see if we can come up a little bit more about this naughty person. A wicked man walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes. Now it's interesting when you deal with that eye. In your back of the dollar bill, the Federal Reserve note, you've got the one-eyed pirate back there. The pyramid with the all-seeing eye there. Does the Bible speak of these things? Yes, it does. Okay, you'll find the eye, Proverbs 23, verse 7. Proverbs 23, verse 7. And again, when you're reading Proverbs, we want to keep in mind the tribulation passage. And so when we know these things, then we could see where it's heading. Proverbs 23, verse 1, this is a guy sitting down with a ruler eating. Fancy meal. Dainties. Proverbs 23:1, when thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee. Put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? The whole banking system in America is a fraud. It's a hoax. I have a little booklet, or a little 48-page I guess they'd call it a pamphlet, called Modern Money Mechanics. And it's written by the banking institution, Modern Money Mechanics, and it shows in there that the whole banking system in America is based on confidence. What? If people understood the banking system, we would have a riot tomorrow if people understood it. There's a CPA, I'm going to try to get him to come up and teach a class if we can. Gene was talking about the CPA down in, was it North Carolina? That says that I can't tell you that the bankers are swindlers, cheaters, and liars. I think that's the words he used. But he said they do act like swindlers, cheaters, and liars. And he teaches how they swindle people. Now, okay, I'm going to start a bank right now. I have nothing in my bank, not a thing. You come in my bank and say, I'd like to make a loan. I say, okay, just promise me that you're going to give me your future labor for $100,000, and then I'll give you $100,000. You say, yeah, but you don't have any money in your bank. Well, I gotta wait for you to give it to me first. So you put your name down on a promissory note. I take that promissory note, put it in my bank, and then I sell that to somebody for $100,000, and they give me cash, and then I give you the cash. And then I make you pay me back the cash plus interest. And I didn't put one penny in it. That's how every loan, almost virtually every loan, is taking place in this country right now. And if you go like this, I can't believe that this is happening. You say, well, then I ain't going to pay my loan. You better know the law before you start doing anything. You must know the law. In the Bible, this is dishonest gain. Ezekiel 22, verse 12 and 13, whoever gives dishonest gain and charges usury in the Bible, that is warrant for the death sentence. That would be a good verse to send your local banker. Tell them that I have this very nice, attractive border on this verse, and I'll be glad to come to your bank and put it in a wonderful plaque, and I'll put it up on your wall. And then we can put a little footnote. Martin Luther used to teach that the death sentence should be put on the one who charges usury. Lutherans don't teach that today, but Martin Luther used to teach that. Now, there's much the Bible says about these things. Dishonest gain is dishonest. Okay, but dealing with this evil eye, as we keep reading down, the evil eye, it says, for riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as eagles toward heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath, notice this, an evil eye. Proverbs 23:6. Neither desire thou his dainty meats. An evil eye, singular. Who would have an evil eye? Go to Zechariah chapter 11. Zechariah chapter 11. Verse 17. Somebody has an evil eye. When I was in Vietnam visiting Brother Roberts there, he took the pastor and Brent and I, we went to one of the biggest Buddhist pagodas there. And you sit there and watch these people, and they're going, all sorts of stuff. And man, you're just sitting there, what is going on? Birds are flying through there. And you think you're in a KKK meeting, because they all got their fancy hats, or a Pope meeting. I don't know what they had. And we were spectators, so we would go up around the top, and Brent had a little plastic bottle, so he kept squeezing it, and that bugged the fire out, so they told him to cut that out. You're messing up with their spirits. But you look in the front of this huge pagoda, there's a big globe with the all-seeing eye right there. Right in that Buddhist pagoda. The all-seeing eye of Horus. The insiders, the secret societies. What is this eye? Zechariah 11:17. Woe to the idle shepherd that leaveth the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. So usually, if you give an evil eye to your children, you'll squint your right eye and look at them sternly through your left eye. And the left eye, medical term, is sinister. Ocular, sinister eye, left eye. What is that evil eye? You'll find it also in Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. And a lot of times people see these ones in a parade, you know, with their funny little hats and their funny little earrings and their funny little motorcycles, and they think it's just some fine, sweet organization. And I dare say, probably many of those men would probably think that's a fine, kind organization. They've been duped and deceived. But the ones at the top know it's a Luciferian organization. And they don't hide that, the ones at the top. Okay, but Mark chapter 7, verse 21, for from within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, and evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man. So there's that eye. Now we, you know, you see why the what's going on in this country, the secret societies. You know, Rush Limbaugh used to make fun of people if you mentioned the New World Order, or he still probably does, but if you mention the Council on Foreign Relations, laugh about it. Well, Rush, just go down the street. It's in your city. It's right there on the wall, on the building. What is it, 666 Fifth Avenue? I'm not sure, something like that.
But then he went right from there, and he even said the news to one of the Council on Foreign Relations office in Chicago was speaking.
So they're not hiding it. Yeah, they're not hiding it anymore.
Yeah. 33rd degree Mason also.
33rd degree Mason, yeah.
Actually, that's the logic of two words on the other. You looked up, and there was a triangle with a big eye.
In a Catholic church you was in one time? He said there was a Catholic church. You looked at dome. There was a triangle with the eye in there.
It always looked like it was looking down on you. Whatever angle you were in.
Yeah. Somebody's looking. Okay, so there's associated with the Antichrist. Okay, verse 16 through 19. These six things that the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him, a proud look, lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. Okay, now notice very closely that the first five, God hates the sin but loves the sinner, I guess you could say, the old cliche. But the last two, he hates the sinner. And people are shocked to find out that God hates people at times. And this is an example where God hates people. Psalms 5, verse 5 says, the Lord hates the workers of iniquity. The workers of iniquity is a very interesting study. If you type that up, phrase, workers of iniquity, run that, you'll find it 21 or 22 times in the Bible, mostly through Job, Psalms, and Proverbs. The first occurrence, Job 31:3. I think it's 31:3. And if you study all those passages, you'll find the details and the techniques that the workers of iniquity will use to help the Antichrist conquer the world. And if you study it very closely, you'll see that they will do most of their work through the court system, the world court. Workers of iniquity, very strongly associated with the mystery of iniquity, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 7. Okay, so you want to find out what's going to go on, what's going to eventually come down, and where it's heading. Okay, study the workers of iniquity. There's one occurrence where the workers of iniquity are in the same verse with the shadow of death. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The shadow of death would be when the death angel or the death cloud comes over the earth, can throw out nuclear radiation, and the promise of Psalms 23 that people in the millennium will walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but not fear evil. They better fear in the tribulation as they're trying to hide down in Petra. Okay, so now there's seven sins here, and they are abomination. Now, obviously, the Antichrist is going to fulfill all seven. Okay, but a proud look. A proud look. Now, if you want to see the proud look in you know, quite regular, go out on the streets, preach on a street corner, and you'll see the proud look as they drive by. The sneering look, this, you know, want to smack it across their face, you know. The proud look. God hates pride to the point where he hates the look of pride. Not only does he hate pride, but he hates the look of pride. Most male athletes, you know, they get their picture. How's a male athlete look? I'm cool, man. That's a proud look. You know, proud look. Rare do you see a smile on her face. It's not cool to smile. It's arrogance. It's pride. Okay, so you got a proud look, a lying tongue. Lying is mentioned twice. A lying tongue here, a false witness, verse 19. So, does the Lord hate Slick Willie's tongue? You know, saying, how could you tell when he was lying? His lips were moving, so that's how you could tell. But boy, things aren't often what they appear to be. What the world thinks as, you know, the leaders that help in the world, they're some of the most destructive, most wicked, most ruthless people that do more damage than anybody. Okay, so a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood. How about that for the doctors, abortion doctors? Every abortionist is fortunate that their parents did not practice what the abortionist believes. Sodomites are the same way. They're fortunate their parents didn't believe what they believe. Neither would be here. That, to me, is a good enough argument why it's wrong. They wouldn't even exist. But they're, you know, people don't, most Americans are ignorant of the abortion process, out of sight, out of mind, and they don't realize the torture. They don't realize that many times those babies are born alive, screaming, especially on failed saline solutions, where they've started to poison the child. The New American Magazine had a young girl in there that was a failed saline solution abortion. She survived it and travels today speaking against abortion. Okay, so can you imagine the blood that's on these people's hands in our country? Now, people often don't read the court cases, and we're just not accustomed to doing these things. And people say that abortion was promoted by Roe v. Wade. And, of course, that's what the news media said. And if you ask the average person, was Roe v. Wade bad and everything? But if people don't read the court case itself, we don't realize what the people were really saying. Whether you agree or disagree, but the Supreme Court said in Roe v. Wade that the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction over the unborn child. They have jurisdiction over the mother, but not over the unborn child. But then they said, who has jurisdiction? The state does. They said it right in there. The state has jurisdiction. What does that mean? That means the state of Indiana can exercise and execute the laws they already have on the books against abortion, and they can prosecute every doctor, nurse in this state, and it will hold up in court. But see, people have failed to read what the court has really said. Every state has the right, the lawful right, to prosecute the murderers of abortion. And they should. It's on the books. And it's called a misprism of office when they do not prosecute a crime that's been committed. And so this is something that eventually we need to try to get out. In order to do the good job of it, we need to hit every sheriff and every prosecutor of every county in every state all at one bang. And boy, would that do something to the abortion industry. And so that's, if anybody's got spare $75,000 sitting around, you know, Gene has a plan how to do it, and we'd like to do it. And I dare say it would bring this issue right to the top real quick. And people start finding out what's really going on. There have been some nurses that have switched, shall we say, to the pro-life side because they saw the actual murdering going on in the hospitals. Baby comes out crying, quick throw it in a bucket of water so it drowns. That's murder. As murder outside the womb, murder inside the womb. Okay, so hands that shed innocent blood. Now, doctrinally, when we don't witness for Jesus Christ, we have blood on our hands. Oh, no, we're not shedding somebody's blood, but we're not cleaning our hands of their blood. So the Lord wants us to witness for him. Did that tape kick off back there? Okay, so that's 45 minutes. So we'll come back to these seven here. Any questions or comments that we covered so far? But, yeah, go ahead.
I don't even remember now where I got this note, but in the beginning of the chapter 6, where it says, go to the end of slaughtering, it says, consider